Welcome to The Weekly Trend, a podcast for navigating the markets through the lens of technical analysis. The Weekly Trend podcast is provided for educational purposes only and does not constitute any professional advice. Listeners should not act upon the information or content without first seeking advice from a registered financial planner.
Welcome back to the Weekly Trend podcast. Today is being our podcast is being recorded on Thursday, August 12th. So before market close on Friday, but this was a great opportunity for Ian and I to be able to get this recorded. S&P 500 is currently sitting at 4450 and still undefeated. Once again, I'm David Zarling. I'm here with a guy who just loves dudes that beat him in video games, Ian McMillan. It's great to be back together after a little time off. Thanks for covering last week. Where should we start this week?
S&P, the heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
All-time highs, again, as of about 15 minutes ago. Nice push. Only index, still at all-time highs. NASDAQ close.
But it's the one to beat.
Yeah. I guess Dow. Dow is up near all-time highs. It had a good day yesterday, but negative today.
But yeah, when you've got the S&P continuing to be, it's not new information. I mean, it's been going on for a decade. Obviously, we've had corrections during the past decade that the S&P has been involved with. Mm-hmm. But the makeup of the S&P is such that when large cap is doing well, S&P is just fine. When small caps are doing well, S&P is just fine.
It's the perfect monster.
Yeah. And that's what we want to compare ourselves against. Not a lot of people would do that. A lot of places wouldn't even consider using S&P 500 as a benchmark or something to look at. But
not,
when you...
Not in the RIA, not in the wealth management world now.
Right. But when you are looking to perform, if you're a net return shop and you're looking to have performance, the S&P is a good place to start, especially if you have a way to measure relative strength, such as a ratio. We can compare everything against S&P 500. So we do that all the time with equities, but an interesting development, I guess I'd like to, and maybe it's not a development, but it's worth highlighting, is just some of the relative strength we're seeing out of commodities. We do it all the time with equities. We compare, but in commodities, which are not all the same, we're seeing some good things there.
But commodities, and you know, especially more so the last, 6 to 9 months, mm-hmm. as their performance has perked up. A lot more time and energy spent looking at commodities. And I think it's important to note that not all commodities are created equal.
Yeah, exactly. And what do you mean by that? Elaborate on that.
Well, you just have different, I mean, anything from metals to grains.
And there's even different types of metals, right? There's not just...
Yeah.
The famous ones, gold and silver, but
yeah, they definitely
also have...
they get the most attention. I've never seen any commercials on CNBC begging people to invest in tin or nickel.
Yeah,
it's always gold and silver.
It's always gold and silver.
Good marketing from those industries, though.
Yeah, for sure. But they're, to your point, there's industrial metals, there's base metals.
Mm-hmm.
And you look across the commodity complex, there's energy, grains, softs. There's a lot there. And we are allowed to compare those versus equities to get a flavor for things that are potentially developing there. So we might look at tin futures and compare them to the S&P 500.
Tin futures. What a chart. If you haven't looked at tin futures, I don't know. They're not getting nearly as much love as a lot of the other... sexier things like lumber, but
all I know is if they're bored on a Saturday or Sunday, they listening to this, they should probably go look at some tin futures and ask themselves.
What a wild ride that's been.
Yeah, for sure. The little bit opposite of what we've seen out of lumber recently. Remember everybody talking about lumber just ripping higher.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Man, beginning of summer, there was no way I was getting a fence this year. Now it's looking more likely. We'll see. That I mean, that type of stuff doesn't necessarily
yeah, like translate well to being like, that's going to be your end cost for the user. But Lumber had a great ride, and it's now corrected 70%, and it's back to the same price. This, looking at the futures chart, goes all the way back to 1994. And now you have to worry about, should you have your fence made out of tin? Probably not.
Probably not.
And anytime we're talking about or commodities steel. Or steel, and that goes back to
aluminum.
When we look at these relationships, when we look at steel, copper, these industrial metals, or tin, nickel, these base metals, they are outperforming precious metals when we compare them.
Hey, what about cotton?
Yeah.
Close to moving to 10-year highs.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the very definition of an uptrend. And some would even say, oh, that's inflationary.
Probably.
I can't necessarily disagree with you on that. But what I do know is that we have the ability to compare these different things and identify if we're going to own commodities, A, and then B, if we are, what commodities? We don't have to just own all of them. We don't have to just own gold or silver because those are the popular ones. We can own the ones based off of relative strength that makes sense to own. I don't mean to oversimplify it, but
I want to jump in real quick and not change the topic, but something we talked about earlier as a team, and you in particular discussed this week in a private discussion. I mean, think about, as you sit here and list off these areas that we can go out and be involved in for our clients as fiduciaries. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, how 10 years ago, you couldn't go out and buy a wealth management financial planning firm, even now, but they didn't even have the ability, I would say. I mean, they're not, 99% aren't doing it now. But we didn't even have the ability to do it.
Right.
I mean, that's what commodities, specifically commodities trading firms did. They're correct. The ones that went out and bought commodity futures.
Right.
Now, maybe you owned it through some type of, super broad
mutual fund.
Yeah, mutual fund. But you weren't out there buying nickel or tin or lead or all these niche types of individual.
Well, and I mean, it's just amazing, and I understand, if I understand public sentiment currently, there's a lot of anxiety in the world, whether it's about COVID, vaccinations, you name it, I understand. But there's a lot of good things out there. And one of them that Ian is trying to highlight here is the access and availability to instruments to invest in has only gotten better continually. Like, this isn't my dad's investment market where he would have to pay $2,000. That was the minimum. And he had some upfront load and it was just a mutual fund and it was, and that's all you had. Right. And God bless my dad. He was a good investor. He was disciplined. He stuck with it. And he did what he could with the tools that were available to him. And now you look and you're like, okay, if I want to own nickel, I can. If I want to own sugar, I can. If I want to open,
frictionless. There's no commissions.
Right. And now we have first world problems. We're sitting there worrying about whether something has a K-1 or not, which is important to consider.
Whether it's going to take my CPA an extra 2 days to do my taxes, right?
Right. Those type of things.
Serious first world problems.
Right. But I can open up a Robinhood app, or I can open a Coinbase app, and I get, like, I don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin. I can buy a fraction of a Bitcoin. My son can open a Robinhood account and experience what trading is like without $2,000 up front. I mean, the world of investing has continually gotten better. And why I think it's great that you brought this up, Ian.
Democratized.
Yeah, democratize. Like, look at the way we do business here. We basically are democratizing the family office. We have a team of experts that are helping out individuals. And guess what? Not all of them are billionaires, and not all of them are high net worth individuals. Not that there's anything wrong with billionaires or high net worth individuals. I think that's awesome. But we have the tools and technology now to democratize the family office that's making the retirement planning, financial planning, and investment world better. I think it's worth pointing these things out because there's so much negativity right now, in my view, of things that are being broadcast news-wise. So let's focus on the positive. Investments, man. That, like, access, the things that people have. So great point. This is not our father's investment world. And it's better. And what dad doesn't want the something in their kid's life to be better than what it was when they were younger? And here we are. Sure. So great point. Pivoting off commodities, probably should talk a little bit about the dollar. I know you've talked about it in the past. We've got the dollar sitting at a trade-weighted dollar sitting at 92.93. It's an important level if you were looking at a chart.
Broke the uptrend, but didn't get a really confirmed breakdown there below 92. We were down there for a day, brought it right back up to 93.
I think there's each chart should be taken on its own merit. At the same time, we do quite a bit of intra-market analysis, meaning we know that commodities are priced in dollars. When dollar makes certain moves, that tends to be a tailwind or headwind for commodities.
That's a natural tailwind for anything priced in dollars.
So it's interesting to notice strength of the dollar since the beginning of June, and some of these commodities overall doing well, like base metals and industrial metals, even energy holding up well, grains like you mentioned, with the dollar doing this.
Copper and then holding up. I mean, we're still above 4.30.
So it's important information that these commodities can show demand outpacing supply in an environment where the dollar has risen. If the dollar were to reverse here, the thesis for these metals accelerating to the upside is there.
That's a great point. So essentially a divergence, you're saying.
Yeah.
Because they've kept their strength when really maybe they shouldn't have.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of those maybe market participants aren't really buying this recent rally the last week or so in the dollar.
Correct.
Not really interested in it being serious or going anywhere. And we're just going to keep on buying our steel stocks and our aluminum stocks.
Yeah, aluminum, another great one. Exactly that. And now we're not so stubborn that we're going to sit here and be like, if the trade weighted dollar is above 93 bucks, that commodities can't continue higher. The commodities that we've highlighted, there's definitely pressure on gold and silver in this environment.
Mm-hmm.
But these base metals, these industrial metals, which are a little also economically sensitive, they can continue higher if the dollar rises. I think another relationship that we talked about internally this week that is notable, that's a little more recent development, is just in general, if I can say this, when the dollar rises, we tend to see treasuries rise. That's it's an oversimplification, but that's in general. And they're not in lockstep right now.
No, they're not. Treasuries really getting hit. I mean, over the last week for sure, really 2 weeks. I mean, we peaked mid-late July.
Mm-hmm.
We'll call it a double top. But yeah, they continue to come back down. I mean, TLT back below 150, 149, which was the highs September 2019. If you want to call that a right shoulder, we'll see.
Yeah, that would be quite the development on what that would be targeting, both from
breaking out. I mean, it's a failure. It's a failed breakout in treasuries.
Right. And they've got this gap that's here from August 6th. And basically in the very near term here, we have a situation, like Ian said, end of July, treasuries sell off hard. Sell off hard can be interpreted different ways, but let's just understand that there hasn't been a green day yet for treasuries since then, and the dollar has risen. Typically, that's not necessarily what you see. You see the dollar and treasuries kind of move together. So it's something worth paying attention to. Is one lying? I have no idea. I guess I don't necessarily think about that. One of them's lying and one of them's telling the truth. It's going to resolve one way or the other. Can they be out of step or uncorrelated? Sure, that can happen. But we know these have ramifications. A dollar above 93 has ramifications. Treasuries using TLT below 148 has ramifications. And some of those do now spill into equities, which we've done a good job. We've spent like 15 minutes not talking about equities, but let's do it.
Let's do it. I continue to say, mentioned it last week, we've seen some follow through. Financials, obviously a big part of the value to banks, insurance, broker dealers, asset management companies, specialty finance, the lenders, things like that. All those areas look pretty good. Industrials continue to look good. Materials have perked up, right? So that's three big areas that should they continue to outperform, they've kind of turned the corner. We'll see if it sticks. But the one area that continues to lag that I would put up there is equally, I mean, industrials, materials, yes, but financials and energy.
Mm-hmm.
I think you got to see energy truly get going on a relative basis for value and small caps to do their thing.
Yeah, totally agree. And if financials are showing their handle, the first hand of value, if I can put it that way, breaking to new highs, being confirmed by companies like Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, these big financial firms that are confirming the new highs in those areas. To your point, we'd like to see the same thing out of energy, out of names like Exxon and Chevron and, you know, ConocoPhillips. And we're not there yet.
We're not there yet. I mean, just even as of right now, we've got two names on energy doubles. So, right. Well, I mean, they can take, right. Biotech has had a decent little run here. That's a big chunk of small caps. I feel like we got energy to get serious about small caps.
We need energy. In fairness to energy too, if there was a bottoming process happening here, this is what it would look like. Now, it has to confirm, you know, if I'm using energy instrument like XLE, you know, if we're above 50, 35, that would confirm that thesis. We're not there yet. We'll see. But if that takes place, that would be a tailwind for small caps and value and those types of things. You know, and a theme that developed last year that we were able to take advantage of that did cool off, that we hadn't been a part of, that we are again with housing and construction. Those have been kind of quote unquote forgotten themes that have returned.
So many areas, building products, home builders, construction. I mean, again, you talk about the same thing. We just covered it at the lunch and learn.
Right.
So all those stocks, why we're in those areas, that thesis is, you know, has returned. It's picking back up. So happy to see that again.
So what's another area like that, that I do remember us participating in that had since cooled off? Is, I know I'm being a little bit cryptic and I don't mean crypto. No, I mean,
I think I know what you're talking about.
So, and it goes along the value slash.
Is it important? Like, is it, let's say this, is it a part of Dow theory?
Yes. You got it.
Is it transports?
It's transports.
Yeah. Turning around.
And that can't be bad. If we do get that confirming and turning around.
They've been abysmal on an absolute basis. And even so, I mean, if you've been in an absolute downtrend for the last 3 months, you've definitely been in a relative downtrend.
Yeah.
But signs of life coming from transport stocks.
Yeah. And I think in a way, transport stocks kind of are a microcosm of what was going on underneath the surface. So yes.
That's a great example. That's a great example to use to explain to people when we talk about just things other than Microsoft and Apple that have been getting crushed.
Right. It went through an 11%+ correction since the early part of the year, like around April, May. And that's kind of what's happened underneath the surface. So yes, we've seen the S&P 500 grind higher, and we've seen large cap tech carry the bucket here for a while. Now we're starting to see some of these old themes perk up again: transports, financials, housing. Does that completely return? That's to be determined. That we can't tell you that right now. Like Ian likes to say, we'll tell you in a couple of weeks. But I think that the transports thing is, if transports are moving higher and semiconductors hold their highs and move higher, those are like two really good combinations for the health of this market.
And I mean, there's a lot of potential, I think, in transports. I'm going to say measured move, probably 30-ish%. If you're going from let's take this last leg from the February lows.
Oh, from like February of this year, meaning
this year, yeah. 213.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're saying this was just a consolidation
run, and I'm using IYT, I assume you are.
Yep, that's a 30. Yeah, you're right. 30% targeting with that. Now that's not a guarantee. That's not what Ian's saying. He's just saying
at all. It's had a correction.
It was a pretty orderly correction. Like
this wasn't like, oh my God, get me out.
Right.
That's a great point. Very, very well behaved, painful, but well behaved correction.
Yep. And now with divergent RSI on our hands, it's moving higher out of a daily base. I'm sorry, but we don't get to get super bearish if transports start to take off, if semiconductors hold these highs, if we get, you know, we talked about the small cap range now for a long time, let's call it 210 to 234, which we're right in the middle of. If that breaks higher for this final part of the year, hyper bullish.
We got Old Dominion, freight lines, ODFL sitting here at all-time highs. You got trucking, you've got airlines they're not having a great day today, but there's some good railroads trying to turn it around.
Yeah. I mean, that's good stuff. We'll see. Like, again, we're open to the idea. You got small caps using IWM below 210. You know, you've got Apple breaking below its current consolidation, that would be a problem. Amazon's a little bit of a warning sign because it did break out to new highs and that failed after a long range. So that's one for the bearish thesis, mm-hmm. that we have a potential correction more broadly taking place. But man, we've held on to this breadth divergence for a while. And now it seems like we're starting to see signs of breadth expansion.
It would be a welcome sight. There's definitely some things there. Financials, I think we can put them back in the participating box. Industrials breaking higher. You know, they had been in a tight, industrials hadn't gone anywhere for 2 months, basically.
Right.
This tight range. They're moving higher. You've had stocks like Deere that have fixed themselves. Caterpillar has fixed itself.
Yeah, those are all
Deer a little bit better than Caterpillar, but I mean, these are stocks that really need to continue to move higher.
If industrials as a whole are going to do well.
Yeah, you got to have things.
You got to have that. So we've covered quite a bit of ground. We didn't get into cryptos, and I'd like to carry that over to the extended portion.
Let's do that, because they have reemerged into the scene.
Yes. So we'll do that. So we hope you guys stay on for the extended portion. If not, that's cool too. We just appreciate you guys listening. Ian, it was great to be back on with you this week. And if you guys are signing off, you'll hear from us again in a week.
Have a great weekend, everyone.
All right, Ian, as promised, heading into this extended portion, wanted to give some time to cryptos. What do we see in there?
Cryptos. Well, our friend and the elephant in the room, Bitcoin, has back up above 40,000. Haven't been able to really get back above and confirm a move above 45.
Yeah, and I think that's a lesson in polarity, right? Like if you think about the lows that go back to February 2021, and you could even argue April 2021, we're reacting to that level now.
Ethereum above 2,900, they are down a few percent today. But what I find interesting, and this time around, you know, we got involved last October, 17-ish thousand, actually around 13,000. Then full disclosure, I think we were out on a rejection at 20. And sounds then right. I got rejected, we got out, and then once it popped back up above 21, we rode it all the way to, but my point being is that, so last time we bought the coins. This time, and there's been some new players to emerge, we've kind of actually been looking at the individual stock, the equity side of the crypto trade versus the coin trade.
It's kind of like the stocks that handle steel versus steel itself.
Yeah, or gold miners.
Right. Now,
gold.
Which will really get the people fired up if they.
It's great to own gold. It's awesome to own gold when it's outperforming.
Right.
Usually more alpha in the actual mining companies themselves.
Right. And so, you know, some examples, and again, these aren't recommendations.
Not recommendations.
But we're just noticing and may have positions that involve companies that hold or transact crypto. You know, like I'll throw one out as an example, like Silvergate.
Silvergate, big one.
That's a good example of something that's doing, has recovered well, is showing some demand. Is it an important level? If you're a technician, you want to look at that chart. We just got done talking a little bit about polarity in Bitcoin. SI, Silvergate, is at a point of polarity around 113, 114. That's an area that early in the year saw support. Since May, it's been resistance. If we can clear that, that next important level there would be around 167, 168. But that's a common theme, right, Ian, that we're seeing across other ones similar.
I think you see it across the most of these cryptocurrency related stocks, MicroStrategy, Marathon Digital, Silvergate, Bitfarms, Hut 8.
Right.
I think that's right. Bit Digital. They all look like, well, the crypto charts themselves are similar behavior.
Right. They might be not the same distances in percentage or any of those things, but where you're seeing price reactions awfully similar, which is not abnormal. We see that across other things too. Like I was just talking about steel and steel stocks or gold and gold miners. There's going to be some areas of inflection that are going to be similar. Perfectly normal.
Yeah, so, and what? You've had, you know, these cryptos have moved 70-80%. Well, a lot of these stocks have moved. Now the younger stocks have moved quite a bit further than that. Silvergate, for example, hasn't.
Right.
Now price per share is probably going to come, right? Kind of just a law of big numbers type things probably going to affect that. They're a lot more expensive on a per share basis than they were in, you know, last October. Silvergate was $17. Now it's 114.
Right.
But other ones, lower priced ones, like Marathon Digital might not have as much of a problem should that become an issue.
Right. Right. But the point is made that this move in the base crypto has also been positive for the companies that deal in crypto. Mm-hmm. And that's worth noting too, in using our process to identify whether it be and not be involved. And somewhat related to that relationship that I kind of wanted to pivot back to is because you mentioned the name Old Dominion and transports.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess where I wanted to kind of see if I could steer you from a lesson perspective is when we look at what transports have done since April, May of this year, which has been that controlled correction, like you said, painful, but controlled. And Old Dominion didn't necessarily have that same experience. From a technician standpoint, what does that tell us?
I mean, it's clearly its relative strength.
Right.
If something, if a stock has moved sideways while its peer group has moved down, you know, that's a lot better behavior. Clearly, that's telling us that investors don't really want to sell. They don't want to sell it as there isn't as much supply there compared to other stocks.
In the same sector.
In the same sector.
And we can see just how important this is becoming for Old Dominion when we just look at a chart of ODFL versus IYT. So ODFL being the ticker for Old Dominion, IYT being the ticker for the transports ETF. So Old Dominion on its own, breaking out to new highs, and transports just coming out of a small base. So like Ian said, in your head, you should be able to figure out, okay, that's relative strength. And here we are. It looks like Old Dominion is at a really important point on a relative basis versus transports and could be a leader. If it breaks higher here, it could be a leader in that space if transports decide to go. Again, not a recommendation, just a lesson that I wanted to go through as far as how important relative strength is, even when there's corrections taking place.
Absolutely.
It's huge.
And those stocks that held up well, that investors wanted to get rid of the least.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you are a portfolio manager and you spent the last few months just tossing out your industrials holdings, but you said, you know what, I still want to keep Old Dominion. I think that kind of shows up in that type of mindset shows up in the chart.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, like if you've got a industrial stock that's not getting sold as hard as the industrial sector overall, that's important information when industrials does turn around. So we could apply that lesson to all sectors.
And I think you could say the same thing about banks. I think banks are showing a very similar behavior, starting to kind of get some oomph when it comes on an absolute and relative basis. And I think finding those banks that maybe are getting to new highs first, didn't get hit as hard, those are probably going to be the leaders. If, you know, we're serious, the market is serious about a new relative uptrend for financials and banks, definitely keep an eye on the ones that are already hitting new highs.
Right.
Like a Wells Fargo.
Right.
I mean, Wells Fargo moved.
Can you believe it? I can't even believe we're talking about it.
Moved should have been a clue.
Right.
Literally the crappiest of the big banks. And it's the first to new highs.
Yep. I mean, the fact that we're even talking about them should be a clue. Talking
about buying Wells Fargo on a breakout.
Well, and how often does that happen internally here? Where
he went with another bank, but can't be that bad.
Well, how often does that happen internally, Ian, here, where we find ourselves talking about certain stocks?
I mean, Alcoa is breaking out.
And we sit there and go, well, wait a minute. We're talking about the stock that's supposed to be bad. Yeah, even Wells Fargo. Okay. Well, that's information. That's something we need to pay.
And people say, well, no, just buy JP Morgan or Bank of America. No, I'm talking about Wells Fargo.
Right.
It was the first of the new highs.
Right.
Got to pay attention to that. That matters.
It does matter. It's super important.
And when I say worst, I used the term worst before. That's just from its perception.
Correct. Perception sentiment standpoint.
I don't know anything about its balance sheet or its financials. It could have a
Yeah, we're not sitting here trying to pick a fight.
Be more financially stable than Bank of America. I have no idea whether it's like the worst fundamental actual bank.
Yeah, no idea. We're not here to pick a fight or.
I just know that it used to be the bank that literally no one wanted to own.
Yes, and now it's the first one out of this. And so if the market as a whole is going to put demand behind that and be the first one to be accumulated out of all the financials, it's worth noting. It's definitely worth paying attention to. So kind of moving back towards, you know, we've kind of talked about small caps in the past, not necessarily ad nauseum on here. From a relationship standpoint, you know, we talked about the relative weakness of transport since May. Small caps, similarly, since March, have been in a correction of sorts. It's moved sideways on an absolute basis, but versus the S&P 500, it would have cost you 16%. So if you held small caps in its entirety during that period of time, you would have underperformed the S&P by 16%. Where am I going with this? Well, we're now seeing compression in that relationship. So we have on an absolute basis, we've got small caps moving sideways in a range since February. We talked about the 210 to 234 area. We talked about energy and financials, these really important pieces that are within small caps. We're compressing versus the S&P 500 since basically mid-July, so almost a month. This break from this compression should provide some good clues on the health of the market going forward. You agree with that thought process?
I do. I absolutely agree with that. I mean, you've got to have small caps participate if we're truly in going to continue this, you know, uptrend that we've been in.
Right.
Now I say that for broad stock market, average stock uptrend. Clearly we're sitting here talking about Russell 2000 not being in an uptrend, but not correct. In a downtrend.
Right. Like it's corrected through time, broadly looking at the Russell 2000, but there's also areas that have corrected more through price than time. Still has taken that much time, but has seen more depreciation. Yeah. And here we are almost through summer, which is supposed to be the weakest period. And I know we've said it on here before, this is the strongest weak market we've ever seen. And I think that continues to be the case. Whenever you've got this, until you break this small cap range down, yes, there's definitely weakness underneath. But until that entire piece breaks down, we still have a consolidation.
I mean, they've tried on multiple chances.
And gotten bid every time.
And every time they bounced it a day later. Every time that, you know, IWM gets down to 208, 209, they buy it back up.
Exactly. And it just, to me, the longer we go in an environment that's quote unquote supposed to be weak. And what I mean by that is just seasonality wise, summer is weak. And there's confirmation of that in the sense of what we're seeing by the majority of stocks. Now, what I do find interesting is we have a rising 200-day moving average on our hands for small caps. We're now coming into an area where price is actually pulled into that 200-day moving average while moving sideways. From a technical perspective, it's a pretty solid setup that we would be able to look back 6 months from now and be like, wow, that was a really quality consolidation by small caps, and look where it led to.
The optimist in me says that it is a consolidation and that this resolves because higher. And I think I bring that because we bring so much of that from, I would say, sentiment and the fact that, you know, bears have had their chance. There's been so much evidence that we should have broken down by now.
Right. And in some areas we really did. Like if you looked at individual sectors, the standard 8 to 15 and in some places almost 20% correction has took place.
I mean, look at how bad some of these software names got hit.
Right. Exactly. So we had a correction. Just because S&P 500 wasn't doing it doesn't mean it wasn't happening underneath the surface. And now that those could be done, again, not a prediction, but if they are done and we start moving higher into the fourth quarter out of these, that's a lot of energy. And, you know, we'll know if IWM is above 234, we'll know if that thesis is unfolding. But man,
what a pent up energy.
Yeah, a lot of pent up energy. And what a quality consolidation if that's the case. And what technicians would agree upon is that you tend to see consolidations break in the direction of the primary trend. Again, not a prediction, because it would also be information if that doesn't take place. If we're below 210 in IWM going into the fourth quarter, we're probably looking at a nice correction in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it's probably going to get rocky.
Yeah. You know, below 210 on IWM, you'd be below the 200-day moving average. You probably have the 50-day crossing below the 200-day. The media will jump all over that, although they don't seem to follow small caps, but they'd call it some golden cross or something fancy. With the point being, a downtrend in small caps is on your hand, and it's confirming the breadth weakness we've seen, and we'd have a weak fourth quarter. We're not there yet.
No, and that could certainly play out. I mean, there's a chance IWM never gets back above 224, 223, and we roll right back over. But it seems as though the things that need to get going, like a transport, keeping us afloat, I'd like to see semiconductors a little better on a relative basis.
Yeah, that's definitely a warning sign. You know, semiconductors on a relative basis are not at the level they were in February. So we have a divergence there in semiconductors versus the S&P. So that's real. That's a real thing.
And that can be just some polarity there.
Yep. And, you know, are we going to see, you know, one thing I know that we look at and have looked at this week are just triple C junk bond spreads, which we have seen pick back up, which is a liquidity signal or lack thereof when we see those spreads pick up, which does impact energy. Now, whether it continues is to be seen, but it's a warning sign. So we're not completely it's rainbows and daisies out there that the market can only go higher. We would be able to look back in time and be like, yep, semiconductor relative divergence was a deal. Triple C credit spreads was important. Junk bonds, some of those would be important to look at. But until we're below 210 in IWM, we're in a sideways range that we don't know which way it resolves. But when it does, that's how portfolios can be tilted one way or the other.
Below 210, probably not super interested in stocks.
Yeah.
Now, could there be an environment where the Russell continues, you know, is in a multi-month downtrend, like legit downtrend, while the S&P and the NASDAQ go higher?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that can happen.
It's done it before.
It's going to be all, I mean, I'm probably going to buy Apple and then walk away. Walk away for a bit. Save some of my sanity.
Right. So that's the scenarios that could unfold. Now, we could also be talking about, I mean, I think this is the least likely scenario. In 2034, we're talking about IWM at 210 or 234 bucks. That would be absolutely crazy. We think that's the least likely scenario. We think that the information that will come out of small caps break to the upside or break to the downside will provide really good information for client portfolios. And so we're going to act accordingly. You guys are listening. You're adults. That's not a recommendation. You do what's best for you. Ian, anything else before we sign off that you want to touch base on?
No. I mean, we spent a lot of time talking about US stocks today.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason, not too much really going on outside of the US.
So. Yeah, there's not a lot.
And even with that recent, now, yes, the dollar's rallied, European finance, I mean, there's some good things out there, like Argentina looks good, Latin America, like there's some
pop. Yeah, Latin America's showing some signs here that will be interesting to see how this develops. Which would have impacts on emerging markets.
Jumping in, you know, overweight, foreign developed. not jump, you know, emerging markets still have a lot to fix.
Yeah, emerging markets are definitely at an important level near this 5180. Yes. I mean, this level goes all the way back to 2007, 2008. You know, if we're going to be below, let's call it $50 overall in something like EEM.
I mean, how about EEM at all-time relative lows? Even before, so EEM debuts May 2003. Literally could not have had a better.
Yeah, good release point. Market. Yeah.
Has now given up. So in the ensuing 7 years, roughly, outperforms the S&P by over 200%. And that's through the great financial crisis.
Yep. And there is a time to own emerging. There is a time to own international emerging markets.
All of that back. It is now underperformed by 7% since it's.
Yeah. New relative lows. Yeah. That chart definitely should be looked at by technicians from a big picture perspective. That is an important one for sure. Setting new records, just like that's a negative record, but. I know a pitcher last night, Corbin Burnes for the Milwaukee Brewers, who tied the major league record for consecutive strikeouts.
No way. How many?
10.
10 batters in a row.
Yep.
That's incredible.
It is. And it was hilarious. Even during one of the at-bats, a guy fouled something off. It went into the crowd and the crowd couldn't find the ball. And I'm like, that's how unhittable you are right now. The crowd can't even touch the ball that was fouled off. Wow. He was incredible.
Brewers won?
They did. They did win. Good.
I'm just glad like you guys didn't lose like 1-0.
Right. Well, and the Cubs are a shadow of them former selves. They kind of had a fire sale, and so there's some young guys there trying to prove themselves. But nonetheless, these are major league hitters.
You love to see it.
Love to see it. So sorry I had to go there. It just popped into my head when I was like, wow, this is kind of record setting that emerging markets is doing that. Not in a positive way, but Corbin Burnes did it in a positive way. But anyway, great point on this chart making new relative lows. The very definition of a downtrend, not what you want to see from emerging markets anyway. Great point on that. Anything else?
I'll say real quick from a breadth perspective, short term, I think we got 7 or 8 sectors with 50% of their constituents above the 50-day moving average. I'm sorry, 20-day moving average.
Okay. So 7 or 8 sectors with 50% or more above their 20-day moving average. Did I summarize that?
So 9 sectors with 50% above the 20-day, 7 sectors with 50% above their 50-day.
Okay, so 9 out of 11, 7 out of 11.
And for the 100-day, we have 7 as well.
Okay.
So... definitely some improvement of where we were. I mean, a month ago, we had 2 sectors with 50% of stocks above their 100-day moving average. 2 sectors. It's pretty abysmal.
That is pretty abysmal. That's a great point.
Real estate and utilities.
Okay. So that makes sense. During a corrective market, you would see those type of areas hold up okay because they're a little more defensive. But now we're starting to see these other sectors that do you have any specific sectors like for example the 9 or the 7 that are above their respective moving averages, what they are?
Discretionary, financials, industrials, materials, tech, utilities,
okay.
Real estate.
There's some risk on areas there. That's not just some type of defensive setup.
Energy is still the worst. Healthcare tried and I don't know. So healthcare is its own. There's so many healthcare stocks that breadth can be a tricky one on that sector.
For sure. For sure. So no, good information there. Good to see breadth improving.
Financials, I will add this. Before we run, financials, the only sector with at least 80% of its constituents with a daily RSI above 50.
Really?
Yeah. So stronger than tech, stronger than discretionary. Discretionary is close to that 80%. Again, energy the worst here. In regards to breadth with stocks above 70, so stocks hitting that overbought signal, which we like to see.
Mm-hmm.
We like to see thrusts with lots of stocks getting overbought. Your best moves there recently have come from financials, industrials, materials.
That's good. That's good. That's good info. While you're talking there, I had to look up what ratio like financials versus tech look like, XLF versus XLK. Some repair there, still a little bit of a mess, but it's notable that this is happening with a rising 200-day moving average. We've recaptured that. Not that 200-day moving averages are everything, but when they are rising, that's not a bad thing. So very interesting to see that type of development. I mean, that's positive, man. That's good information.
Long-term positive, short-term, a pain in the butt.
Yeah, a little bit messy. But
again, if we live up to the potential that this market has created, I think we'll all be looking back in 12 months and saying it was worth it.
Absolutely. And so we'll see. I mean, that's the beauty of price is we can be Bayesian. We can wait for new information to come in that confirms or denies our theses. We don't have to get married to a position or married to our opinions. We can just use price to identify where to be and just as importantly, where not to be. So good insights, Ian. It's great to do this again with you together. To all those listening, we really appreciate it. And you'll hear from us again in a week.
Have a great weekend, everyone.